But that's not right now, is it? Now is right now, and that's what you want me thinking on, ain't it? The here and now.
The here and now, Thumar echoed solemnly, nodding. That's right, Sergeant. So in this here and now, I'm going to need you to open that large door, just like you always do, when your relief arrives. Which should be soon, shouldn't it?
The sergeant nodded, eyes focused on Thumar. Yep, that's true. Soonish. Only thing is...
Thumar's eyes narrowed. What, Sergeant? What is the only thing? Speak. The man swallowed again, wiped the back of his arm across his forehead.
Not usually me who opens the door. Fact is, not my job.
Thumar glared at the cornered man. Not your job?
Nope, no, it's Nunce's.
And would Nunce be one of those three over there? He pointed the sword at the other three men Sofjian was standing over.
No, Your Grace, he ain't.
Muldu said,
uh-oh.
Thumar ignored him and the honorific for the moment. Have you ever opened the door? Gone above the call of duty?
The sergeant nodded. Yeah, sure, just not in the ordinary is all. Just wanted to put that out there, so...
Will opening the door yourself be an unspoken code that you are held captive against your will? Would it send your comrades outside, running back to the citadel like carrier pigeons? Will it, Sergeant?
The man slowly shook his head. No, nope, likely not. Just trying to be helpful is all.
Braelar said, That is duly appreciated, but perhaps settle for truthful. Direct answers to direct questions. You can manage that, yes?
The man nodded, and Braelar said,
So, would it be less suspicious if one of your minions there opened the door instead?
Aye, maybe. Not that me opening it would be alarming, like you said. Just a little peculiar. And guessing you want this to happen without anything peculiarish at all.
That's right. So, we will have one of the other guards tend the door after you impress upon him the importance of following orders, with no irregularities whatsoever. Now then, just a few more questions, yes? There is a tunnel below us that connects to the catacombs, true?
The sergeant gave a quick nod, and Braelar continued.
In these catacombs, there is an offshoot passage that connects to the old well of stairs in the citadel, correct?
Aye, the sergeant said. There is at that.
And you can show us the way after we have relieved the relievers of relief duty?
The sergeant said, Nope.
And then quickly added,
Not that I wouldn't mind. Mind? What if I could? Just never had cause to go down there. Don't know the way. Or whereabouts whatsoever.
Braelar asked, And who, pray tell us, dear sergeant, could and would?
The sergeant looked around the room as he replied, Ferret master could. Goes down there ratting from time to time. Old as the trench he is, knows anything there is to know about earth and tunnels and...
He looked past as Morgan's thick legs, stopped, and then pointed at a figure in the corner with a crossbow bolt in his sternum.
Only he can't, on account of being real dead from the looks of it.
Braelar closed his eyes and sighed, perhaps anticipating Thumar's rage as the deposed emperor shouted at the jackals and eagles.
2 dozen soldiers to shoot at, and you whore sons took out the bony old man with no armor on? Gods preserve us.
He started to turn away and then spun back, the tip of the sword pressed into the sergeant's collarbone.
A map. There must be a map. Of the catacombs?
Of course, the sergeant said quickly, breathily. Of course there's a map. In the citadel proper.
I knew about that one, you fool. Another map. Here. Somewhere else.
The sergeant shook his head and closed his eyes, apparently fearing the worst. But the deposed emperor pulled his sword away, face purpling with impotent rage or frustration.
Muldu said,
Well, that's a plaguing thorn in the shithole, ain't it?
Guess we got to amble down the lane and knock on the Citadel gate after all, eh?
As Morgan looked like he wanted to stomp the sergeant to death.
Told you this was a fool plan. Let's kill the lot of them and climb back out of here.
Muldoon said.
We ain't climbing anywhere just now, you damn bastard. Daylight. Going to have to wait for dark again and—
Silence,
Braelar said. The both of you. While there are miles beneath our feet, we know the general direction of the destination. This is a setback, but not defeat. We will simply have to do a little exploring. As Morgan looked down at the captain,
without plaguing getting lost and wandering around down there for a 10-day and starving to death? How do you figure we do that, Cap? We got no map. We got no—
We make one, I said. Everyone looked at me, apparently having forgotten I was in the room. I reached over my shoulder and tapped the brass writing case. I have paper, quills, ink. I can map our route as we go, keep track of dead ends, be sure we don't lose our way. At the very least, we can find our way back here. Provided we have time, we could find this well you are looking for. Thumar looked very much like he wanted to skewer someone with his big sword.
We have little time and less, scribe. Sinead is marching out to meet the Eagles and Confederates in the field. If we do not seize control of the Myrmidons and begin this coup, they will be destroyed.
Braelar replied, That is true enough, my lord, but our choices are to move with haste and try to find the well ourselves, or give this up altogether and accept defeat. He looked around the room.
Does anyone else have any bright suggestions?
No one volunteered any, and the captain said, Very good. As soon as we deal with the relief, we head down and find our way. Thumar thrust the sword towards the sergeant again, pressing the tip into the wobbly flesh just under his chin.
If you or your men give anything away, I will let the Myrmidon here have her way with you. She will peel your mind apart one slice at a time. It will be like getting skinned alive, but will last as long as I command it to, and I will command it to last a very, very long time. Do I make myself clear?
The sergeant started to nod, and must have nicked himself on the blade, then settled for,
Aye, your grace.
Thumar turned the sword ever so slightly and made the sergeant gasp.
And if you call me your grace one more time, I will chop you into bits and feed you to the bull crabs. Understood?
Aye, understood.
The deposed emperor drew the sword back and sheathed it, then turned to Sofjin.
Wake the other three.
Then he looked at his men.
Scrub any blood off the floor, tidy up the desk and benches, then half of you can break your fast in the larder over there. Take a respite. The rest of you, assume the leopard mantles and do the same at the tables here. The relief will be here within the hour, and we want to be ready to welcome them.
Chapter 39 Braelar, Thumar, and several jackals and eagles were sitting at the table in leopard surcoats and scale cuirasses. As Morgan and Muldoon had protested being excluded, but Braelar had rightly pointed out that they were hardly inconspicuous and would spoil the illusion immediately, and it was imperative all the relief enter the tower without any having a chance to run free and alert anyone. The sergeant and two other leopards were in position as instructed, with the two soldiers at the table, immediately facing the door, and the sergeant at the desk. Thumar had repeated his warning once the soldiers came to, and neither of them seemed willing to defy him. But then they had to know they were likely dead either way. That was certainly the downside to such an absolute Sildunian policy on prisoners. They didn't have much to lose. Though there was a wide difference between a quick death and one drawn out, perhaps that would be enough to keep them in line long enough to lure the relieving leopards into the room. Bright rectangles of sunlight were on the floor from the arrow loops in the wall, but Braelar had ordered the lamps put out to make the room as dim as possible to cover anything that might have immediately looked out of the ordinary. I was in the kitchen and larder with Muldoon, Venduro,
some other jackals, and Sofjin and Estensia, and as Morgan, Rudgie, and the remaining jackals and eagles were in the storage room. I much preferred this room. It had no dead bodies. And what's more, ever since growing up in an inn, I'd always found something comforting about the pots and pans hanging from hooks, the shelves with spices, the stone thrall against the wall to help keep food cool. There were some small skinned animals suspended from a circular rack as well, but that was worlds better than being among the human corpses. We all ate what we could, and the pantry and larder were well stocked with smoked meats and pungent cheeses, figs and pears, mushrooms and turnips, breads of various sizes. Vinduro even found himself a boiled egg, which brought a bigger smile to his face than I'd seen in a 10 day or two. There was a small buttery as well, that only seemed to have small casks of weak beer. Still, that was better than nothing, and I gulped down a cup to steady my nerves. While everyone else seemed to take this all in as a matter of course, seemingly enjoying their food, despite the fact that we were about to ambush a group of leopards any moment, all I could think about was that more blood was about to be spilled, or brain boxes shaken beyond repair. I still ate, as I was famished, but I might as well have been chewing cud for all the pleasure it brought me. Nastenzia kept her gaze fixed straight ahead, eating only when Sofjin directly ordered her to. It was impossible to tell whether the prospect of being expendable or valuable weighed more heavily on her, as neither seemed likely to get her back across the veil to unite with her son. Assuming she had one, it could have been a well-wrought lie. I was becoming more Sildunian by the day, and that made my stomach protest as I chewed a wedge of salty cheese. We all ate in silence, exhausted and still jittery. Or at least I was. It was quiet until Vinduro said, to no one really in particular,
"When you fart, do you ever notice it smelling like dirt?"
Muldus gave him a queer look.
"What are you plaguing talking about?"
"Farting. The air monkey. The belching spider. The bull snort. The arse salute."
"I know what a plaguing fart is, you dim bastard,"
Vinduro said.
"Well, mine smells like dirt sometimes. But not all the time. Why is that?"
No one seemed inclined to answer, so I volunteered. Someone I knew in university was studying to be a surgeon. They examined bodies, dissected corpses, and, Vinduro asked,
"Cut people up for fun?"
I looked at the falchion Muldus had across his knees. "You cut people up all the time," I said flatly.
"Aye," Vinduro replied. "But not for fun. That there's jackal business. Just something that got to be done."
"Well," I replied, "surgeons don't do it for fun either. They do it to learn. And from what I heard, digestion, the way you feel, even flatulence, it has a lot to do with what you eat." Sofjin said, "This is riveting. Do go on, please." So Vinduro did.
"But I didn't eat any dirt,"
Muldu said.
"Maybe you did, just after your horse kicked you in the head again and you fell over. Accidentally ate some plaguing dirt. I swear the fool questions that pop into your hollow head sometimes."
Vinduro ignored him.
"So if it wasn't dirt, on account of me not eating dirt, what would do it?"
One of the jackals sitting nearby said,
"Probably roots. Do you eat a lot of roots, then? Vegetables that have been in the dirt a while?"
"He eats a lot of eggs," Muldu said, "which makes him smell worse than swamp gas. Dirt would be a plaguing improvement."
The pounding on the thick front door made me jump and spit out half a mouthful of cheese. I stood up, wiped some crumbs off my face, and tried to concentrate on breathing as I held my crossbow at the ready. I heard the large wooden beam being pulled up and off the rack by one of the leopards and gripped my crossbow tight, wondering what we would do if the prisoners inside gave any sign and the leopards outside attacked or fled. The sergeant called out with the line Braylar had told him to use.
"Took you plaguing long enough. Come on in, boys are tired."
I heard the sound of feet as soldiers walked in, and then a voice I didn't recognize.
Early, if anything, you bastard. Always griping about something, ain't you?
More footsteps, then the same voice.
Plague me, but it's dark in there. Durgis, light one of them lamps, would you? Light two. Can't see a plaguing thing in here. Say, where's...
A crossbow string twanged, immediately followed by several more. Then we were all moving. Muldus and Vinduro in the lead, Sword and Falchion out, with Sofjian guiding Nastenzia out right after. I darted out of the larder, crossbow up, and saw a chaotic melee. The jackals and eagles had gotten the jump on the leopards, and several were down already, but the relief was a dozen strong, and the armor and helms were doing their job. Even some of the soldiers who had been struck weren't down. Bolts were flying from the crossbows of jackals who had just come out of the storage room. But after that, everyone was switching to a sidearm. So I did the same, having just as much chance of hitting an ally as a foe. Sofjian was pulling Nastenzia along, raised her splayed hand, and swore, not being able to target the leopards with everyone in such close proximity, then tried moving up along the wall to find a better angle. And that's when the thrown spear struck Sofjian in the upper chest, piercing her scale armor and driving her back into the wall. Nastenzia was staring down at her, half pulled to the ground as well. I looked up, and the man who had thrown the spear had his sword halfway out of the scabbard when his Morgon nearly decapitated him with his brutish polearm, the only thing stopping the blade from finishing the job being the scale avantail draped down from the helm. Braelar was advancing on a leopard with a spear and shield, buckler in one hand, bloodsounder in the other. The spear flashed out. Braelar deflected it and stepped inside. The leopard tried to back away to maintain the range to use the spear and hit a wall as Braelar came in fast. The flail heads whipped up and down, but the soldier was moving forward as well, and the deserter heads only glanced off an arm as the leopard swung his embattled shield, catching Braelar in the shoulder, knocking him off balance and into the wall. But rather than try to step back again, the leopard dropped the spear, pulled his soroka off his belt in one smooth motion, and stepped forward to stab Braelar. The captain pushed off the wall, batted the long thin blade aside with his buckler, and, because there was no room to swing Bloodsounder, launched himself into the leopard, smashing the bottom of the flail haft into the man's face. The leopard stepped back, his nose a pulpy ruin, and blindly slashed with the soroka. But Braelar anticipated that, and blocked it with his buckler before hitting the man again with a haft, this time shattering his teeth and likely breaking his jaw. As the leopard stumbled back, Braelar led him, using the space to whip Bloodsounder around, catching the man in the side of the helm with the flail heads, dropping him out of the fight. One of the leopards Sofjian had woken was reaching over to pick up a spear when Muldus chopped into the back of his exposed neck, dropping him to the stones as well. I was about to step back to clear the way for the seasoned soldiers when I saw Vinduro retreating from two advancing leopards. I started forward, buckler up, curved sword ready the way Muldus had taught me. Both leopards had embattled shields out, one armed with a sword, another with a knobbed iron mace, and they must have trained together before, because they were working well in tandem and not getting in each other's way at all. Vinduro blocked a sword thrust, dodged the arc of the mace, and took another step back. His own sword slashed out, skipping off the top of one of the merlins on the embattled shield, and then the helm behind it, but doing no damage. The pair kept advancing, looking for an opening, and Vinduro backed into the table, tripping a little as the swordsman stepped in and threw a blow that Vinduro barely deflected. Without thinking, I ran the last few steps, planted my foot on the bench, and launched myself into the air, slashing down at the leopard wielding the mace. He saw me and got his shield up in time, but my weight slammed into him, and we both went spilling to the floor. The wind was blasted out of my belly as I landed on another bench and looked over at the leopard, seeing him grab his mace as he made eye contact with me. He was getting to his feet faster than I was, and my body didn't seem to want to respond, my lungs no longer working, and I knew he was going to brain me with that mace, when Muldoose stepped in, the falchion chopping down onto the man's elbow, between the bazooband protecting his forearm and the scale sleeve. The arm snapped and was half-severed, and the man screamed, but not for long, as Muldoose kicked him to the ground and struck him several times with the falchion. I managed to get to my feet and looked back to see that Venduro had dispatched the swordsman he'd been facing. In fact, seeing three jackals corner and cut down another leopard, it seemed the battle was over. Nearly. The leopard sergeant was standing behind a jackal, one arm around the soldier's throat, the other holding a soroka to it. His eyes were wild and darting as he looked around the room, surveyed the dead, the dying, the victorious. He stopped when he saw Thumar.
"You, Your Grace," he said, half snarling, half fearing for his life. "You were never letting me walk out of here, but you are now."
He started sidling towards the front door, closed but unbarred, and the nearest jackals and eagles stepped back, waiting for a cue from the deposed emperor. Thumar lowered his bloody sword as he slowly walked towards the sergeant and the jackal.
"You are right about one thing. I am not letting you walk out of here."
The sergeant bumped into a stool, kicked it out of his way, and kept moving towards the door.
"You do anything sudden like, you or your men, and I'll cut this throat like it's nothing. I swear I will."
"I'm sure you mean that, sergeant," Thumar said in an even tone, still moving towards the pair. "But then I would simply cut you down and make you suffer. Immeasurably. What does that accomplish? Nothing. Less. It is all loss. But you lower that soroka, surrender, and I will spare you. You and any of your wounded here. I will let you live. Test my patience on this point, and..."
The sergeant shook his head.
"Lying. Spitting lies. That's what you emperor types do, ain't it? No way am I lowering nothing here. You're going to open that door, and..."
He started screaming, eyes rolling back in his head, and I looked over at Sofjin. She was upright, face drained of blood but full of wrath, both hands outstretched and splayed. The sergeant jerked and spasmed and screamed, and the jackal reached up, grabbed the arm holding the soroka, and twisted and ducked, wrenching it away from his neck. Then he jumped forward as the sergeant dropped the blade, fell to his knees, blood dripping out his nose and ears, eyes rolled back completely, until his scream ended in a gargle as he bit his own tongue off and fell to his side. Thumar nodded and looked at his men, pointing to the wounded leopards.
"Kill those bastards."
Chapter 40. Muldoose spun me around by the shoulder.
"What the plague was that, you dumb horse cunt?"
"What?" I asked, confused.
"You know plaguing well what? Leaping in the air like a plaguing fire frog?"
I slid the sword back in my belt. "Well, it distracted the soldier long enough for Venduro to take out the other one. I saved him." Even the droopy eye was full of anger.
"And I saved you. Never leave your plaguing feet in a fight unless you are grappling on the ground. No jumping around like a plaguing idiot. You hear me?"
I nodded, looking at the soldier he had smashed and slashed into sludge. "Yes, I hear you."
"Do it again and you can fend for yourself after."
Then he moved away. Muldoose was slowly recovering from the after effects of Ruzjenna's attack, but it was clear he favored his right side and still suffered in silence a great deal. I wondered how many fights he could scrape through before his limitations got him killed. Of course, the same could be said about me every time I made the foolish decision to wade into a battle. I glanced over at the leopard sergeant, the blood leaking out of his mouth and trickling out his ears, forming a pool around his head, and shuddered. Sofjin was sitting on a bench, and Rudgy was bending over her, dressing her wound with makeshift bandages torn from cloth. The spear hadn't penetrated deep enough to take her out, but there was blood around the wound and seeping into the bandages. I wondered how much blood someone could lose before they fainted or dropped. When Rudgy finished, she gave a single small nod and helped the Memrodon slip back into her scale cuirass. It was clear then that Sofjin had little to no use of one arm, as getting into her armor was an ordeal. I wasn't sure how that would impact her ability to use Nastenzia when the time came. But there was no turning back now. The jackals and eagles finished bandaging their wounded. Two men had been killed, and there were several other casualties. One eagle who was sitting on the floor and leaning against the wall had taken a wicked blow to the side of the neck. It might not have severed a major artery, but the wound was still bleeding profusely. Another stocky soldier with big ears was kneeling alongside him, pressing a wad of cloth to staunch the flow, but it was soaked through, and he looked around, asking for more, something else to stop the blood loss. The wounded soldier had a glassy look in his eyes and was breathing shallowly, his face covered in sweat, but oddly calm otherwise. Thumar walked over, standing above the pair, hands on his hips, face grim.
"How bad?" he asked.
The eagle tending the wounded man called out again.
"Give me a plaguing tunic, anyone."
The wounded soldier waved one hand weakly and said,
"That's all right, Bullop, all right. You go on ahead. Got an emperor to crown, don't you? Go on now. I'll guard the cisterns."
Bullop grabbed some more wadded cloth from another Sildoon and looked up at Thumar.
"My lord, we can't just leave him. We can't. Emmert here is..."
"He can't come with us, son. And we are too few and have suffered too many losses. I can't spare you. Bind him as best you can, and then we're off."
Bullop looked poised to argue, but the wounded soldier reached up and put his hand on the man's arm.
"We've been waiting for this a long time. Long time. You ain't missing it. So..."
He took a deep, labored breath.
"Go on. Get on with it. But fetch me a cask of that weak-ass beer first. Crack open the top. Leave me a mug. That'll do just fine. I'll be right here waiting for you when you're done."
Bullop didn't respond, eyes fixed on the bloody wad of cloth on the man's neck as he wound several strips of cloth around it. I looked away. That was somehow worse than the sergeant who had his brain shaken until it bled out his orifices. Everyone was finishing up, wiping down weapons, readying lanterns, taking some food and drink from the larder, and throwing on whatever leopard armor and tunics they could find that fit. There was nothing remotely close to fitting as Morgan, but Braelar solved that deftly enough by telling him and a few others that they would be posing as prisoners. That didn't sit well with Esmorgon, but once Thumar supported the idea, that was that. I was pulling on a cuirass of leopard scale when I overheard Venduro say,
"What about the ferrets?"
I turned around as Maldius replied,
"What about the plaguing ferrets?"
"Well,"
Venduro said, as if the answer was as obvious as the sun,
"they're in cages, ain't they?"
Maldus gave the younger man the disconcerting glare with one eyelid drooping, which would have ruined the effect on almost any other face.
"And?"
"And,"
Venduro said, lowering his voice as he looked at the soldier with the neck wound,
"there's a real good chance we ain't coming back this way, no matter how it plays out."
Maldus shook his head, exasperated.
"Real plaguing unlikely. So what?"
"The ferret master is dead," Venduro said, "and depending on how things go, might not be any relief to this tower for a while. Poor little things could starve."
Maldus saw me listening to the conversation.
"Can you plaguing believe this horseshit? About to sneak into the bloody citadel, and the skinny lieutenant here is worried about some skinnier weasels."
I struggled to come up with something that managed to moderate or mollify, but it didn't matter. Venduro started walking away, saying,
"I'm letting them loose."
Maldus replied,
"Dumb plaguer, we're about to..."
He stopped when Vindura walked past the screen into the larder, then waved his big hand in the air after him.
Every time I think there's no more foolishness to be plaguing scene, Ven comes up with a new one.
He started towards the captain, presumably to tell him that Vindura would be back shortly. From behind me I heard,
Still glad you signed up that pen for Seldune duty?
I hadn't even noticed Reggie approach, which wasn't surprising, considering how tired I felt. There was no overt affection or hint at all that the other night we'd been copulating, but there was some wry humor there. Still? Who said I was glad in the first place? She nodded, looking straight ahead.
Saw you rescue the lieutenant? I have to say, you're not half as useless as any other non-Sildoon I've come across.
Making sure no one was paying attention, she gave me a quick wink, and then she moved off to check on Sofjin. Given how little I understood women of any kind, it wasn't surprising that this lifted my spirits, embarrassed me, and confused me all at once. Thumar had the troops lined up, a few carrying lanterns, the rest with weapons out, and Vindura made it back not a moment too soon. Muldu said, flat as a blade,
Find your furry friends, did you?
Vindura replied,
Aw, yep. Hard to tell with them bouncing all over the place, but I have to think they were plenty grateful.
You have to. Gods, but you're...
Braylar walked over and addressed me.
Okay, are you ready?
I had my writing case open and balanced in front of me, hanging from the strap. I wasn't sure how much more ready I could be. Aye, Captain, I am.
Very good.
Then he looked at Vindura. Lieutenant, since you are inclined to be so especially helpful, you will hoist the lantern the whole way so our archivist has the proper light and does not lose our trail in the catacombs.
Vindura nodded. Beats latrine duty.
Only because we lack opportunity, Lieutenant.
Then he walked back to join Thumar, and a moment later, our procession was off. As we headed towards the hall past the larder, I hazarded a look behind me at Emmert, expecting to find him slumped over or dead already. But he was holding his mug up in a shaky hand, his gambeson soaked with blood to the waist, offering a final salute. We proceeded down the corridor, the captain and deposed emperor at the lead, with Vindura and me somewhere in the middle. I noted any landmarks or annotation in the margins, but mostly I was just trying to be certain I captured the directions we took and the scale as best I could. The first leg was simple enough, as we took a few turns, passing some mostly deserted storage rooms before arriving at a spiral stairwell that went down into what I presumed were the catacombs. Footsteps echoing, we all descended, and even with lanterns lighting the way far better than torches, the sense of being underground, heading towards the untold dead, was somehow worse than navigating the blackness of the aqueduct. The stairs went down much further than I expected. Having only read about catacombs, I wasn't sure what to expect. I imagined we would be in the thick of them once we stepped out of the stairwell. But of course, it was just another empty, unremarkable corridor. We proceeded down it until it turned north, and that took several more turns, hitting long stretches, passing intersecting hallways. The featureless corridor we were in abruptly shifted as we passed through an arched doorway and into a corbelled hallway beyond. Where the walls had been large blocks of hewn stone before, now they were covered in their entirety on all sides by a horrible and dazzling array of bones, arranged by type. It looked like the ends of thousands, or more likely hundreds of thousands of femurs, filled the walls as far as the eye could see, creating a ghastly, textured look that seemed to undulate as the lantern light washed over it. As we entered the first hall of bones, Vindura swung the lantern to get a better look and whistled.
Plague me, but that's a lot of legs, ain't it? I knew they carted skeletons down here, but I always figured they repositioned them in their own compartment or cubby or whatnot. Never figured they'd organize them by... bone? Why do you figure they went and did it like that?
I jotted down some hasty notes as I said. I suppose with a city this size, built on a site like this, tombs or above-ground cemeteries are reserved only for the most powerful commanders and emperors. So keeping the dead arrayed by a person wouldn't make best use of the space down here. Either way, I said, peering forward at the seemingly endless bones, the deserters would have liked something like this. The texture, I mean. Vinduro nodded. They'd have to crawl on their hands and knees, but high up, see what you mean. We walked on, and while I kept waiting for the stench of death to wash over me, the only thing I smelled was age, mustiness, dust. The bones themselves were odorless, having been stripped of all flesh long before they made their way down here to the catacombs. And still, glancing back and seeing our pocket of light ending, the dark of the tunnel seeming to chase us along, and then the same to the front, our moving, illuminated island seemed small indeed. And even without a foul stench, it was impossible to pretend we were anywhere but the halls of the countless unmarked dead, and equally impossible to ward off the dread. After passing through another arched doorway, the corridor curved to the northwest. Only this time, the walls were more modulated still, filled with nothing but phalanges of some kind. We crossed a corridor, and I marked out the options on the paper as we turned east, presumably towards the citadel. However, it only went east for a small stretch before curving back south and ending in a semi-circular grotto filled entirely with skulls from floor to the barrel ceiling. We backtracked and tried the other direction, and this went on for hours as I scribbled down notes and directions and tried to be consistent in ticking off distance in my head before jotting it down. It was obvious Thumar was getting more frustrated with every dead end, or the recursive passages that wound back around and reconnected with other ones. Every time we seemed to be making some headway going east towards the citadel, it seemed the catacombs intentionally thwarted us. But the mapping did help, as there were a number of times we would have become hopelessly lost without the pages to refer to. A few times, I had to reorient myself or refer to marginal notes to be sure I wasn't misdirecting us. But no matter how arduous it was, I was confident I was at least saving us time. We'd explored one branch trying to go east before coming to another set of spiral stairs heading down. Thumar was furious, wanting to double back and try one of the other corridors near the beginning that headed west. Breelar said,
"My lord, the passage you speak of is several miles behind us. Might I suggest we at least give the one below our feet a chance? And if it seems to be taking us further away from our goal, we abandon it and return to the other."
Thumar grabbed one of the hip bones and wrenched it free of the wall.
"This goes down, the very opposite of up, also the opposite of where we need to go."
"And yet we don't know that," the captain replied. "Perhaps the tunnel that ultimately leads to the well of stairs actually does so, a level, even two or three below. Unfortunately, we just don't know, and the resident ferret master's bones will be down here soon enough, so he is no help at all. But going back several miles to try a different route doesn't guarantee any better chance of reaching our destination, and will actually waste more time."
Thumar was gritting his teeth, lower jaw rolling, sunken eyes seeming to sink further in the shadow. He turned to one of his men, a long-faced soldier as serious as a tomb.
"What say you?"
The man, who must have been an officer of some kind, standing in for General Krasinios, nodded slowly.
"Aye, I'm thinking Captain Kilcorn has the right of it. Best to give the lower level a shot. If we make no headway, we climb back up here and head back to the beginning. Time's no ally of ours, my lord. But we got the map maker there, so we know how to get back to the other corridor at the beginning, if needs be."
Thumar deliberated for another few moments, and then nodded. We went down. I started mapping on a different sheet, indicating the stairs up and down on both pages.
Part of me hoped this level proved even more confounding or less likely to lead to the well they spoke of. While there was no real difference between exploring deeper in the earth, something about having the bones of millennia above us gave me chills. Cursing myself a fool, I kept scribbling as we found a corridor that headed in a mostly easterly direction, with a few small detours. The positioning of the bones changed on this level. Where before each section of tunnel contained only one kind of bone, the sections here had strange patterns. One wall seemed primarily composed of bits of spine, but broken up by a row of skulls in the middle. We came across one of the rounded grottos that had the most elaborate pattern yet, with the curved wall, mostly vertebrae, interspersed with diagonal rows of skulls, and two columns supporting the roof that had a mix of every kind of bone. Though the skulls were still the dominant feature, the other types of bone all radiated out of. Exhausted, and with eyes blurry and limbs heavy, it was difficult to gauge how much distance we traveled, and impossible to tell what time of day it was in the world above. Below, time was meaningless, or would have been if Thumar hadn't insisted on pushing us so hard, and reminding us after every new turn that haste was paramount. Sinead could be vanquishing his cosmopolitan army any time, and we were the only thing that stood a chance of stopping them. We'd gambled everything on our ability to sneak into the Citadel and reclaim the Memurdons. As we walked down a curving corridor surrounded by ribs and skulls, I asked Vendoro, "When we were closing in on the Cistern Tower, someone exchanged a bird call type of signal to create a diversion. I'm assuming that was Jackals?" He nodded, lantern bobbing in front of him.
"Ah, yep. Commander Darzak knows we're on the move by now, and surely sent runners to some of the other towers that still support Thumar."
"To what end?" I asked. Vindero switched arms and shook some life back into the fingers of his free hand.
"Part of the reason we got to hurry here. The towers still loyal will throw in their support the second we seize the Memurdons. But only then."
I marked down a side passage we chose not to take, as it headed southwest. "So they'll know the moment Sofjin works her memory magic. The Memurdons Sinead tasked to still monitor the towers, they'll feel it immediately, just as they did when Sinead stole them when we were in the Hippodrome."
"Oh, yep."
"And then what? Sinead will know as well, won't he? He'll sense the loss of them. He might not know Thumar orchestrated it, or how, but he'll know his Memurdons have been stolen." Vindero glanced at the new part of the corridor as we passed through an arched doorway.
"Plague me! Are those all teeth?"
I looked at the wall. They were indeed. It would appear so. But back to Sinead. "What will—"
"Nothing all that original. Bloody coup."
I reached the edge of a page and swapped it out for a clean one. "But he'll still outnumber Thumar's forces in the field, even without the war Memurdons helping him or the others giving him rapid intelligence, he could still prevail."
"Could," Vindero agreed. "But he'll still lose Sunrak. Well, should anyway. Still plenty of towers loyal to the bastard in here too. But Thumar's supporters inside will rally once they know he's in the city and has the Mems with him. Capital of coups is going to get real bloody today. But once it all gets mopped up, Thumar ought to be the one standing with the crown on his head."
I thought about all the priests and their attendants, with a never-ending parade of carts laden with new bones coming down here, filling new corridors somewhere, arranging the last evidence of the dead in obscure patterns, for obscure reasons perhaps only they understood. Would Thumar send Sinead's skull down here? To be an anonymous testament to the never-ending struggle, treachery, and bloodletting in the world above. The tunnel of teeth gave way to a corridor of tibias, which ended in a grotto and required more backtracking. But we found another hall heading east. Still, while we seemed to be making halting progress, the number of recursive passages and dead ends was maddening. There was no guarantee that any of the tunnels on this level, or one below, or any we might actually traverse, would actually lead to the well. We'd been down here for what must have been half a day, stopping only briefly to rest our legs and swallow some quick mouthfuls of food,
but there was nothing to say we were any closer to where we needed to be than when we started. No one spoke of it. No one had to. Not even curmudgeonly Muldus, Snide Bank, or the most vocally critical of all, Asmorgon. There was a heaviness about traveling here, an unyielding leaden dread, that made conversation seem like an abomination. And that, with the growing doubts about us being able to actually break into the Citadel, silenced everyone. But not long after our break, there was a change as we continued east, passing walls of alternating scapulas and skulls, when they suddenly stopped. We hadn't passed through an archway, which was the usual demarcation, and they weren't replaced by a new kind of configuration of bones. The stone walls on either side beyond were blank. It was almost startling, after so many miles of the remains of the dead. The passage continued for 100 yards, and then we passed through a square doorway. The space was bigger beyond, and I sighed, expecting to have to pen another grotto. But this room was square, boneless, and only an antechamber to another larger space seen through an open doorway ahead. Thumar kissed his fingertips and lifted them towards the sky, the ceiling anyway. Then he turned and looked back at us. He had a beatific smile that seemed horribly out of place on his normally stony face.
"We are close. The gods have willed me to return to my proper place, and when I do, that will be a harbinger of their own imminent return. Come."
Muldus looked back at us and rolled his eyes as we pressed forward. Passing through the door, we entered a domed rotunda, the walls filled with carvings that appeared to be a millennium old. The dome itself was covered in alternating ceramic tiles of black and white. There was a doorway on the other side, but Thumar marched immediately to the left, seeming to know exactly where he was. We all followed into a large rectangular chamber filled with columns carved in the same style as those of the Hippodrome, spiraling panels depicting ancient battles, victories, losses, discoveries, treaties, statesmen, soldiers. In the center of the room, there was a rectangular sarcophagus, the lid inlaid with alternating rows of lapis, turquoise, and carnelian, forming a border around a remarkably lifelike effigy of a hawkish-looking man. Thumar ran his fingertips over the surface, tenderly, reverently. I whispered to Vindoro,
"What is this place?"
He whispered back,
"Never seen it. Heard tell of it. Chamber of First Emperors, they call it. Expect that's the tomb of the first Eagle Emperor. 300 years ago, or thereabouts."
"How many have there been?"
"Eagles? 2, he replied. "Well, Thumar will make it 3 if he retakes the throne. Thumar twice king, they ought to call him."
The chamber of the Eagle's first emperor gave way to 10 more in succession, each filled with a single sarcophagus. If we'd had more time, I would have taken a bit of charcoal out of my case to try to take a rubbing of the effigy. But time was certainly our enemy, rather than ally. We navigated around the remaining dead emperors. There was another rotunda beyond, identical to the first, a short passageway past that, and then a set of spiral stairs heading up. Thumar was moving like a man possessed, and had already started up the stairs, apparently knowing exactly where they led, as half the company had already disappeared above us. I jotted a note about the stairs as I stubbed most of my toes on one of them, and then just paid attention to the wild flashes of lantern light on the walls above me, like something alive and trying to escape this place. We had gone up what felt like 1,000 stairs, but couldn't have been 1/3 that when they abruptly ended, and Thumar and Braelar were already halfway down the unadorned hallway ahead of us.
Chapter 41. Unlike all the halls of the catacombs, this corridor had torches and brackets, lit and well-maintained, and from the flickering flames, it was clear we were about to taste open air again soon. The walls were a black smear behind each one. But even if the wind didn't take them, someone had to replace or relight them every hour or two, so we could be expecting company at any moment. I watched the figures ahead and saw Sofjian laboring a bit. While the injury might not have been life-threatening, yet anyway, she had obviously lost a fair amount of blood and was woozy. She matched her brother for stubbornness and pride, so if she was allowing anyone else to see the effects, it was only because she was completely unable to mask them at all. Considering that the success of this mission was entirely on her bloodied shoulders, and Nastenzia's bonier ones, this was fairly concerning. As we reached the end of the corridor, we turned to the right. But it was clear from the natural light ahead that we were entering a far more open space than we'd seen in what felt like forever, and I had to force myself not to rush ahead. When I came to the end of the hall, the torch flames danced so much I thought they might go out as a gust caught them. I stepped out onto a small stone landing, catching my breath. We were in a giant brick cylinder that disappeared into the darkness below, seeming to sink into the earth even deeper than the trench that surrounded Sunrak, and rising several stories above us where light poured down from a large circular space in the middle of the domed atrium roof. The rest of the small party was already moving up, walking the single set of stairs that spiraled up the interior of the stone cylinder to the top. Vindura was looking back at me and must have seen the look on my face.
"Well, of stairs. Guessing you guessed that already, huh? I've only been up there looking down. Right different perspective going the other way, ain't it? Well, you can't say, of course, never having seen it before from any direction. Anyway, mind the stairs. No rail, and it does get gusty."
He started up, and I said, "Does anyone use this anymore? For water, I mean."
"Nah," he called back. "Used to be a major source of water for the Citadel, years back. Springs or underground river of some such thing, down there in the deep."
"What happened?"
"Can't say for certain. Be better off asking Cap or Hugh or—"
He stopped himself, then spoke again as if he hadn't said the other lieutenant's name at all.
"Cap. But the only important thing is climbing out of here without letting a big old breeze suck you down into the black."
He was right about the wind. It seemed to be flowing both up and down, dragging at sleeves and anything projecting off the body. The stairs were 3 feet wide, but even keeping as close to the wall as I could, I felt the incessant tug towards that indeterminate fall in the center. Round and round we went, up towards the light, until the steps finally reached the rim at the top, which was the most treacherous moment, with no wall to cling to, as I practically jumped off the stairs. I hazarded one look back down into the depths, and even without wind swirling around the well, I still felt as if I might be drawn in. I stepped away and looked around. The building we were in housed a fabulous garden and a collection of small trees and shrubs, and what appeared to be a diverse collection of medicinal plants I recognized from university. Feverfew, lavender, sage, peppermint, tansy, as well as many that weren't even vaguely familiar. It was obvious why so much of the roof had been left open to allow sun and the occasional rain in. Thumar's band hadn't drawn any weapons yet, which I thought odd, before remembering that we had all donned various imperial badges, surcoats, and embattled shields with the suns and leopards, each occupying half the field. Still, Nastenzia obviously didn't belong, and a number of soldiers had wounds, Sofjian in particular, looking as if she had just visited a battlefield surgeon. Everyone swatted the dust off as best they could, with most walking off to a narrow irrigation trough that delivered water from some aqueduct piping or other hidden in the wall and rinsing off. I splashed some water on my face and forearms as well, which helped to wake me up for a brief moment, and turned to Vindura, whispering,
"What's the plan now?"
He was gargling some water out of his cupped hands, and Rudgy chose to answer, despite my not having ever seen her sidle up next to us.
"I expect we are going to walk through the Citadel like we own the place, make for the frame room when opportunity presents itself, and head to the streets when the festivities kick in."
I looked at her, blinking water off my eyelashes. She must have been as exhausted as the rest of us, but managed to seem both alert and somehow looking forward to what happened next. I said,
"We do look decidedly
beat up.
Oh, yep, she replied. Not a handsome group, that's for certain. But Sani just rode out of the capital to meet an enemy in the field this morning. The jackals have been causing a ruckus all over the city all night, staging fights here, there, and everywhere. And the populace has got to be right nervous, I'm guessing, especially with rumors of Thumar's return flying faster than hungry hawks right now.
Which means? Vindero said.
Which means war is in the wind today. The short sergeant has the right of it. Blood is being spilled. Not in every street just yet. That'll come later. Gallons of it. But it's still dribbling just now, here and there, with a lot of folks suddenly real restless, so some nicked-up soldiers won't be causing any raised eyebrows today. Besides, I'm sick of skulking around like a plaguing ferret, ain't you? Or were you hoping we'd crawl up Sinead's shitty guard robe? Come on.
Reggie gave me a punch in the upper arm.
Just act like you belong. It'll all work out fine.
I nodded, completely lacking confidence in anything she said. I didn't believe for a moment that everything was going to be fine. In my relatively short stint with the jackals, even when things went perfectly according to plan, the results were never what any non-Sildoon would think of as fine. We all started walking towards a door on the far side of the garden. I whispered to Reggie and Vindoro ahead of me,
"What if someone recognizes Thumar? Or Braelar? Or anyone? I mean, it's not as if the Emperor has been gone a 10 year or two."
Vindoro replied,
"Well, Thumar is presumably out there in the field, so it ain't as if anybody in their right skulls will be thinking he's like to stride down a corridor in the Citadel, all dressed up like a leopard. And anybody looks like they are slowly passing all that out are like to be hitting the stones dead before they finish."
Reggie nodded. "Anybody recognizing somebody here is going to be awfully bewildered, even if only for a hot moment." She snapped her fingers. "And that's about all it will take. We got this, Aki." I remained unconvinced. "So we're just going to stroll through the Citadel, killing off one bewildered leopard after another until we reach our destination?" She looked at the lieutenant.
"You were right on that score. He sure as hell does ask a lot of questions, doesn't he?"
Vindoro nodded.
"Ah, yep, that he does."
He looked over his shoulder and gave me a crooked grin.
"Cap and Thumar got it worked out, Aki. Well, provided Soft doesn't bleed out on us. That would throw a big fat turd in the soup, wouldn't it?"
There was no arguing that point. We were exiting the garden when we passed a Thervation servant carrying a bucket with shears and a spade, and other small tools I didn't recognize. I held my breath, but the servant kept his eyes low, bowing once as we all filed past. I looked back at him as we started down a hallway with a tall, corbelled ceiling, but if he thought it odd passing a group of armed leopards in this part of the Citadel, he kept about his business and disappeared among the twisty trees. The first thing that was immediately clear was that the Citadel was adorned and decorated in far more grandiose fashion than the rather austere and simple Jackal Tower. The walls were draped with rich tapestries that seemed imported from every corner of the Empire, and also broken up frescoes and murals and small alcoves with marble statues designed to impress upon the viewer the power, wealth, and, to some degree, absurdity of the Leopard and Sun Tower. There were fabulously carved triptychs and rich paintings that stretched for a 10 foot or more. Even the most basic and functional of surfaces or elements of construction were decorated, engraved, to ridiculous degree, as if the artisans commissioned had been promised payment only if they managed to outdo the sculptor, carver, or painter on the previous panel. Which meant every hall was filled with priceless artifacts, which also meant we would be encountering armed occupants at any moment. And so we did. Rounding a corner, Thumar still leading at a relentless pace, we nearly collided with another group of 10 leopards walking in the opposite direction. Braelar addressed one as he helped steady him.
"My apologies, good man."
The one similarity the Citadel had with the Jackal Tower, and I presumed all towers in the Empire, was that they were occupied primarily by Sildoon, slave soldiers waiting for manumission, and the indigenous Thervation servants, clerks, and staff. Spouses and families seemed to be housed in residential buildings in the vicinity,
but out of the way so as to avoid throwing silt or shit and endlessly turning gears. This was no different. There were 8 slave soldiers, not yet with inked nooses